What do we say to the God of Death? Not today. We'll see. Can the Lakers stay alive in game four tonight against the Thunder? Happy to have everybody here on the Lakers Collective. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button. He's Jovan Buha, Jason Tipp. I'm Trevor Lane. Guys, game four, Lakers trying to avoid the sweep. How are we doing?
Well, Prince Oberyn said that, and then he got his head crushed. So let's.
I didn't want to add that
for this point, but I'm doing good. It's good to see you guys. This is probably our last show for a current ongoing Lakers season for a little while. So let's enjoy it.
I'm starting to get sick, and I don't know if it's the series. causing this or what, but I lost my voice entirely yesterday. I was glad I didn't have a show to do, but I'm excited for tonight. And I think like everything we've seen with this group throughout the season, there's been an element of resiliency and dealing through adversity, right? And every time we've counted the Lakers out or thought the Lakers looked like they were done, they found a way to rally. So I would not be surprised if they push this to game five in OKC. And I think at that point, the season's probably over, but I think we'll see a valiant effort tonight.
I hope so. I think that's the general sentiment from a lot of fans. And we'll talk a bit about, you know, previewing tonight's game and all of that. But I think that's a general sentiment from a lot of fans. We want to see an effort. Want to see the Lakers really turn in a top tier, back against the wall, do or die effort. At least if you're going to go down swinging in this series. Let's talk about how we've got here so far, though, because it's been a few games since we had a show. The Lakers, obviously, they're down 0-3. Every loss has been by double digits. First two were by 18. I want to say what the last one was by, what was it, 23, something. I don't know. I've repressed it at this point. It was a lot that they lost by in the most recent one. And the Thunder have just looked like
23.
It was 23. It just looked like the better team than the Lakers have. But, Jason, let me get your thoughts first. What have you seen over the last couple of games here from the Lakers, from the Thunder in this series? What has this revealed?
So I think that all three games kind of had their own personality, but they followed the same kind of flow in that the Lakers were able to compete for roughly 2.5 quarters. And then the margin got big. And then that was when their execution really started to slip. And then things essentially got ugly. So I look at, like, you know, obviously game one, we don't get anything from Austin. Game two, Austin, as a big positive, flashes his upside as the ability to, I think that was his first 30-point game against OKC too, if I remember correctly, in his career. And the turnovers were still there, but like, I viewed that as a major bright spot. And we're going to dive deeper into Austin later, I'm sure. But like, I thought that was like a good kind of like, hey, I can do this kind of game. And then obviously game three was the game that we saw the switch in the defensive coverage to go away from the double teaming and to more help later on drives. And it briefly led to a disruption in OKC's offensive rhythm as Shea kind of jacked up a bunch of shots and missed. But then he started to find his rhythm. And A.J. Mitchell's really killed the Lakers the entire series, which goes to show how weak we are against like kind of speed guards, so to speak. So it's been different problems at different points in the series. But the fundamental issue is when you're at this much of a talent disadvantage, you have to have like nearly perfect execution on every single possession. And it's just really difficult for this group of, like, even as good as this group has done relative to expectations, they have a lot of players in their rotations who are prone to execution errors. Like, in high usage, Marcus Smart will turn the basketball over and take bad shots. When depended on against really high-level centers, DeAndre Ayton will get outworked. DeAndre Ayton will struggle to catch and finish in traffic. Like, there's, you know, I'd extend that to Jake LaRavia and some of the struggles he had early in the series. Like, as you go down from player to player, Jackson Hayes has been kind of useless in this matchup. Like, there's just three or four players in the Lakers rotation who are kind of prone to execution errors under the circumstances, which means they're not playing perfect. And if you don't play perfect against the Thunder, they're just way more talented than you, and you're going to lose by a lot. And then in each game, right around that late third, early fourth, you could tell the entire group is just like, oh, man, we're done. Like, we don't have it. And then that was when the execution errors really started to pile up and they'd get blown out. So this is kind of more or less going exactly the way I thought it would. And I don't think that's some sort of hot take. I'm not trying to take a victory lap. It's just this is what happens when the Thunder's 15th highest paid player is probably better than Austin Reaves in this series, because Austin is coming, you know, coming back from an injury and far from his best self. And it's a favorable matchup for an AJ Mitchell who relies on speed. And it's just really difficult for the Lakers to overcome the talent differential in this setting.
It definitely is. Now, I will say for DeAndre Ayton, at least he's got a really nice new chain that he decided today. Yeah. To show.
Oh, man.
Why?
I can't.
Look, I think the we talk about the Lakers. What have been the deficiencies going into the season? We knew speed, athleticism, defensive ability, particularly on the perimeter, but also in the paint, that those were going to be challenges coming into the season. Those were things that were going to need to be addressed to some degree, the trade deadline. They weren't. That said, it had Rob Pelinka not done what he'd done at the trade deadline. I was not super high on the trade. I was wrong. Luke Kennard, you may not be in round two right now had he not made that Luke Kennard trade and he have him play those first two games against Houston the way that he did. But in general, the Lakers didn't add the speed, the athleticism, the defense that they needed at the trade deadline. They're at a huge disadvantage, and OKC is the team out of all teams to exploit those disadvantages that the Lakers certainly have right now. So I think this has been a revealing series for the Lakers. It's shown how far they are. I do think OKC is the worst possible matchup for the Lakers in the NBA, but nonetheless, it has shown what they're going to need in order to get to that next level. And it's a lot. It's a lot. There's going to be a lot of work to be done this summer for Rob Pelinka and the Lakers front office as the front office even gets rounded out. But Jovan, what are you seeing so far in this series, and what are we taking away?
Well, I want to echo everything you both just said. I agree across the board. I do a big picture takeaway on my post game show every show, and my big picture takeaway coming out of game three was just talent beats tactics. I think JJ has coached his ass off in this series and these playoffs. I think outside of, I know Jason disagrees, but I thought they were a little bit too aggressive with the Shea doubling at times through the first like two mm-hmm. games and a quarter. I thought it like, I just don't think this is I looked up some of the numbers. Like OKC has been leading the playoffs in scoring out points per possession out of double teams and points per possession out of Shea ISOs. And I just think the Lakers were a little bit too aggressive in winning the battle against Shea and ultimately losing the defensive war. And we saw, I mean, AJ Mitchell and Chet Holmgren, like give those guys a 4-on-3, 3-on-2. And like even just 1-on-1, they're cooking whoever's in front of them, but give them an advantage and they're exploiting that. So outside of that and outside of it, I think being a little too slow to take Jake out of the rotation and just switch up the rotation, like I think JJ's largely pushed the right buttons in this series. And even with the aggressive coverage against Shea, he did switch to the more conservative 1-on-1 with the flooding and playing in the gaps, as we saw after Kayson Wallace hit a few threes early. So this to me is not like a tactics thing. This is not a strategic thing. I think the Lakers, they've been organized offensively. They have had some stretches in this series of executing at a high level. I mean, they've been up at halftime in each of the last two games. Like that, in and of itself is an achievement and shown like LA can outplay OKC for a half, even in this form without Luka Doncic. But the fact of the matter is like there's a significant talent, skill, athleticism, defense, toughness, and versatility gap between these two rosters. I think even with Luka on board, and the Lakers have to find a way this offseason to shrink that gap in several of those categories. I don't think it's possible to shrink the gap in every single category, but can you get more athletic? Can you get deeper? Can you improve the defense significantly? And we've seen JJ's been able to create defensive schemes and systems that are greater than the sum of their parts, but give this guy some real defensive ingredients and see what he could do when you give him several plus defenders rather than one or two in the rotation. So I just think like we talked about it in the series preview, Trevor just alluded to it, that this was going to be a measuring stick series. This was going to be the series that, yes, it was nice to do it against Houston, but Houston's not the team standing in LA's way for the next 3 to 5 years of the Luka era. It's OKC. And this series to me is like the great revealer of, we've learned a lot about who fits, who doesn't, who can play up to a certain level. I think several guys fit, but maybe are slotted a little bit too high right now and need to be slotted a little bit lower. But this series to me is far more important and indicative in terms of how the Lakers should build their roster this summer, compared to the Houston series, because Houston to me is probably the sixth best team in the West. And like, it's nice to beat them. It's nice to beat them without Luka. It's nice to beat them without Austin for four games. But OKC's not going anywhere. OKC, I mean, they just got the 12th pick in the draft. Like, they're going to be adding another lottery level talent to this group. And if they have to move off of a rotation guy, they have enough assets to go and replace that player with a cheaper contract. So they're going to be here for the foreseeable future. And if I'm LA, this was revealing in terms of how you stack up against them. And like, you are close in some regards, and you are far away, and as far away as seemingly you can be right now. So I think that they got to address those needs, and like, this is going to be a big summer in terms of building the next iteration of this group that could better stack up with OKC.
Yeah, I think there's some interesting things here when we look at what's being revealed about this roster, when we look at what ultimately they're going to have to do here moving forward because of the gap between themselves and OKC. You're absolutely right. Look, OKC is not going anywhere. San Antonio is not going anywhere. Last series against the Rockets was infinitely more fun because winning is inherently fun. But this, as you said, Jovan, this series is actually more important because it's going to shine that spotlight. You can paper over some things. You can send the double at Kevin Durant all day in game two, and the Rockets can't handle that. You take the ball out of SGA's hands and, okay, Jared McCain is going to shoot 82% from three, 9 of 11 from deep. You've got AJ Mitchell is going insane. And by the way, he's going to make about $8 million total on the 3 years on his deal. Absolutely insane when they've got those kind of talents at the cost that they've got. You add in Chet, you add in Hartenstein, everything else that the Thunder have. And what the Lakers have tried defensively hasn't worked, and it's shined a light. Well, it's worked to slow down Shea, but everybody else just gets going. It's shined a light on what the Lakers are going to need here moving forward. So important data, I think, coming from this series. I think you could make the argument that the Lakers are the third best team in the Western Conference. You can maybe even push it to third best team in the NBA, but the gap between the Lakers and the Thunder, and maybe to a lesser extent, the Spurs. Maybe we'll find out a little bit more about that in the Western Conference Finals. But the gap between where the Lakers are at and where the teams above them are at, it's pretty big. And so that's something they've got to sort out this summer. And that's where, I mean, Jason, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but I think the big takeaway is exactly what the takeaway would have been back in February when all they did was add Luke Kennard at the trade deadline. There's a lot of work to do coming up this summer.
Yeah, and I think when we're discussing that gap between San Antonio, OKC, and the rest of the field, that gap exists for everyone. And I think that's worth mentioning because, like, there's this other conversation you can have, which is like, okay, AJ Mitchell was the best player on the floor in game three, and he makes $3 million. And J-Dub's coming back. Aaron Wiggins isn't even in the rotation. They're about to have the number 12 overall pick. Who knows if Tomas Sorber ends up being any good. You have Nikola Topic coming back as well. He is hit back, but he'll continue to get involved in the rotation. They could make trades. Like, San Antonio has these three young players that are all going to get dramatically better year over year over the next couple of years. That all sounds great. But the problem is, that's an unrealistic standard for really everyone else. Like, there's no version of this story where you're like, oh, we have now closed the talent gap with OKC or with San Antonio. And so I think, first of all, we're not just going to sit here and punt. You're not going to just be like, oh, well, we can't beat them, so there's no hope. You have to just incrementally do the best you can. Right? Exactly. You just have to incrementally put together the best basketball team you can, little by little, each piece at a time, making solid decisions. Like, not to take us to the Austin Reeves conversation, because I know we're going to do that later, but like, same thing goes with Austin. Like, there's this idea, it's like, oh, well, if we pay Austin, we won't be able to afford other good players. And it's like, yeah, but if you lose Austin, he's a really good player, and that's a step backwards as well. And the truth of the matter is like, you're not going to be able to put together an 11-man rotation like OKC. So let's start by just putting together the best 7-man rotation we can, you know, and to in like, I think there's a valuable amount of perspective to take there. And then what you hope for is that through some good game planning, like what we saw with JJ, and through a Luka Doncic who can go toe-to-toe with Shea and perhaps even maybe be better, depending on what he can accomplish next season, like, you just give yourself a shot, you know? And, like, you know, the 2018 Rockets didn't have the same amount of talent as the 2018 Warriors, to be clear. But they were right there. Why? Because they built the best roster they could. They built a system that was unique and that was designed to slow down Golden State. They had a good game plan, and they were literally right there. And that to me is what you got to try to be if you're the Lakers. Just try to be the best basketball team you can be and stop necessarily thinking just measuring stick with OKC, because that's a battle that literally 28 of the 30 teams are going to lose.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the issue that, that, like you said, 28 teams have that problem when you're looking at that overall battle. You know, I'll tell you one thing. It's going to require the Lakers to hit on a lot of things this summer. And part of that will be the development of a Dude Thero. Jovan mentioned it, Jake LaRavia, maybe JJ stuck with them a little bit too long. In fact, game three was the first game that he has not played all season. I'm of the mindset that tonight, look, I think a dude got 13 minutes in game three. Let the kid run wild out there. Let him go. He's going to make mistakes. He turned it over in like 5 seconds when he was first out there, but you have to inject chaos into this series, and Adu athletically is at least on that completely different level than I think everyone else on the roster. So that's another thing that I'm looking forward to seeing tonight. He's going to have to grow and develop. That we're talking about, you need the best 7 or 8 man roster. You're going to need to not just hit on free agency, not just hit on your trades. You're going to have to hit on finding some diamonds in the rough. Right now, Adu Thero is a guy to keep an eye on heading into this matchup just because of what he can do athletically and what he can potentially become this summer. But you're going to have to find a way to find success with these guys. And it's part of where, you know, some of the other guys that you haven't hit on, we look at Dalton Connect, the way Jalen Huchefino worked out, that has been hurting the Lakers in this series and in general as well. When we look at their lack of depth, the Thunder have ridiculous depth, the Lakers lacking in depth. And I think that's something that has really been a big factor in this series too. Jovan, moving into this game tonight, what are you most hoping to see aside from just fight? What do you want to see tonight from the Lakers?
Well, I would have to lead with the fight, right? Like I think game five against Minnesota was pretty disappointing last year. They came out not great. And then Rui had that, I think he had a left-handed dunk on Rudy Gobert or near Rudy Gobert. And that sort of sparked the group, sparked the crowd. And then they made a push, and then eventually Minnesota pulled away. So I would like to see them not let go of the rope tonight, first and foremost, right? Like I don't want this to be, like, they've kept it close for at least 2.5 quarters in all 3 games. I don't want this to be the one game where OKC is up like 32-14 and just blows them out start to finish. So I think at least following the same model that it has been at, you know, at a minimum, what would be nice to see. I would like to see a game two type performance from Austin, right? Like I would like to see at least him be at a higher level than he was at in game one and game three. I would like to see, I think JJ should go with an 8-man rotation tonight, and it's the starters plus Luke plus Jackson plus Adu. And those are the 8 guys who play. I think he should have a quick hook in terms of if anyone is not engaged, not playing their hardest. Like this needs to be an empty the clip game. Like I wouldn't be opposed to even the starters or the 5 best players, whoever the 5 best players are in the rotation tonight, those guys all playing 40 minutes tonight. Like if that's what, like, I mean, this is a game 7, you're down 3-0 to the best team in the NBA who has yet to lose a game in the playoffs. Like this is, you empty the clip tonight. If LeBron has to play 45, if Austin has to play 4, like you try to win the game and try to extend the series. And if you don't have the legs in game 5 because you emptied it all tonight, at least you are going out with pride. You won at least a game, and like this isn't a sweep. So that tonight is like an empty the clip mentality, and I would like to see everybody play with the requisite level of motor, focus, awareness, engagement, and not only play with it for the 2.5 quarters, but ideally play with it for the 4 quarters. And like, can JJ and the group, because it's not all just on JJ calling a timeout. I think he's been calling quicker timeouts in this series. It's got to be the group, like, all right, we had a couple bad possessions in a row. Let's not let this spiral. Let's not let this be five possessions, six possessions, eight possessions. Like, can you keep it to one or two? And so I think that that's the thing. Like, from a tactical perspective, I think they've tried pretty much everything. I'd like to see them start with the flooding, and then if Shea gets into a rhythm, you could start going back to the doubling and playing out of that. Offensively, I would like to see maybe a little bit more LeBron in the post, and I think he's had advantages against their smaller guards and wing defenders, and they just have not been able to leverage that consistently enough, and it is sometimes devolved into more LeBron creating from the perimeter, which I think, especially against this defense, like, his advantage is going to be post-ups and playing closer to the basket rather than from the perimeter, unless his jumper is just going at a really high level. So I think that they started to fight, like, really, I would say that the second quarter of game two and the first half of game three should be the blueprint of how they want to play offensively. And that is getting downhill in the pick and roll, spraying out to shooters. That they're going to have a high three-point shooting night and a low turnover night. And one thing I was saying to someone at the game the other day was, like, I think if the Lakers win a game in the series, it's going to be the game where they make more threes than they have turnovers. And that's how it was trending in game the first half of game three. They had 11 made threes at the half and nine turnovers. Then in the second half, they only made three threes, and they ended up having, I don't remember how many turnovers off the, I think it was like 17 or yeah, I think it was 17. So they had eight turnovers to three made threes in the second half. Like, you can't have that in half against this group. So I like to just see, like, execution at the highest possible level, higher than the first three games, emptying the clip with just how hard guys are playing. If you need to do quick subs and you know, do like 3-4 minute shifts, but guys are resting for a minute or two coming back in, like, I'm fine with that too. But it's got to be like emptying the entire clip tonight. And as long as they leave it out, all out on the battlefield, and if they lose, they lose. Like, they're playing a team that's better, that is just has, I mean, we already talked through some of the differences. Like, they're at a major disadvantage here. But if they can fall on their shield admirably and you lose a competitive game where you're in it until the final second, like, that would be nice to see. Would be great, but, like, I'm saying, like, if they don't win, at least going out in, like, the most competitive game of the series.
You can't save any energy or anything like that for a game five. And if they, you know, you empty the tank here in game four, if you can survive to game five, fine. You deal with that day when you get to it, but you've got to give everything you've got in order to get this one. I like the call out on LeBron in the post. I think one of the interesting, battles in this series so far has been, you know, that LeBron is really the main advantage that the Lakers have over the Thunder. The Thunder's bigs are better. The Thunder's guards are better. The Lakers do have LeBron, who's got size on the wing compared to some of the guys the Thunder throw at him. And the Thunder are okay defending him with Lou Dort, or even defending him with Alex Caruso, who does a great job defending up. The Lakers have been trying to get Cason Wallace, have been trying to get A.J. Mitchell switched on to LeBron. And that battle, because the Thunder are okay defending him with other guys that give up size, but they're not okay with giving up as much strength as when you can get some of your real smalls on them. So the Lakers getting that switch onto LeBron and being able to, and the Thunder are going to do everything they can to avoid that, but getting some of those smalls switched onto LeBron and allowing that advantage to really play out of the post, I think that's the one spot that they may have a bit of an edge on OKC. And so I'm interested to see if they can get a little bit more of that working. But you mentioned the threes. Yeah, they only took 10 threes in the second half. The Thunder did a really nice job. Austin really had it going in the first half in terms of the drive and kicks. I want to say he had 8 assists in the first half and did a nice job getting a paint touch and then kicking the ball out. The Thunder did really well to shut that off in the second half. The three-point volume has got to be up. You need an outlier above average three-point shooting night from the Lakers, and you need, they haven't gotten it yet, but you also need a below average, a cold shooting night from the Oklahoma City Thunder if the Lakers are going to find a way to get this thing done. Jason, let me kick it over to you, though, kind of on Austin and what you want to see out of the Lakers tonight, all of that. Give us your thoughts on what happens tonight. What do we get out of Austin Reeves? What's the conversation been like around him?
Yeah, I echo everything you guys have said. I don't want to, like, retread any ground. I agree with Jovana. Like, you want to just see a competitive game. I agree with Trevor that having more of an emphasis on trying to get LeBron better, more favorable matchups in the post. I think the two things that I would add are, one, we still haven't really seen much zone defense, and that was something that had some success against the Thunder in the regular season. I think that would be the next kind of like element of surprise, so to speak, to try to disrupt rhythm. I would kind of hold off and go to it after the Thunder go on some sort of run to try to disrupt their rhythm. The second piece I'd see is, like, I would just really like to see another good game out of Austin. I think, you know, and we can get to deeper into this when we actually talk about the Austin thing in the big picture, but I think that for every basketball player, success is about like finding the things that work and replicating them, and finding the things that don't and trimming the fat. And that's what happens when you get lots of reps. Like in Austin, to his credit in his career, like the first time he really started running point for the Lakers, it wasn't pretty, but you know, he'd have good sequences, he'd have bad sequences, and he just got better and better and better at it as time went on. And then it was like, okay, we'll now do it against this good team. We'll now do it in this environment, do it with this other challenge in front of you. And this is the toughest challenge. It literally does not get any harder than scoring against this OKC defense for Austin. And so reps against this team where he finds success are extremely valuable. And like, he proved in the second game that he's capable of scoring efficiently against these guys. He continues to have turnover issues, and that's something he's going to have to clean up. But like, I would love to see just like another 25 plus point, you know, relatively efficient night, just to just kind of show another demonstration of the fact that Austin is capable of solving this puzzle.
Yeah, that's the thing. You want to see an efficient shooting performance. The turnovers, this is the number one turnover team in the NBA. This is a very difficult matchup when we've got a guy who is, and this is the Lakers as a team and Austin Reaves as well, when there's an athleticism deficiency and you're going up against Thunder players that are as fast as Cason Wallace is, that can do the kinds of things that these guys can do, the kind of perimeter pressure they can put on. You want to see Austin find a way through this, and the Lakers as a whole as well. Because this is, not only are the Thunder the most talented team in the NBA, but stylistically, they're the most difficult matchup in the NBA for both the Lakers and for Austin Reaves. So finding a path to some kind of success against that is going to be important. I think we've talked about it already on the show, but every single possession matters. Every single possession has to be locked in, has to be very, very focused, and you've got to be very careful with the basketball to the point where you're not committing turnovers. But it's also a fine line between how do you manage that versus aggression, trying to get into the paint. They had success with the driving kick. We saw Rui Hachimura doing a great job knocking down kick-out threes last game. He's been absolutely phenomenal. You want to keep generating those. So it's a matter of finding ways to create these scoring opportunities that you want to get without turning the basketball over against a team that is at the very best at doing that, and even more than that, against a team with an athleticism deficit like the Lakers and Austin have. That's an even bigger challenge. So finding ways through this is going to be critical for Austin Reaves, for the Lakers. Win or lose, obviously you'd like to see him step up. I thought the one area that was particularly egregious for Austin last game, it was the defense. We saw the Thunder targeting him. He was not able to come close to staying in front of either AJ Mitchell or SGA. Look, SGA is the MVP. He's probably going to win it again this year, but you'd still like to see them not just get straight to the rim. I think there was a stat floating around that Austin wound up being the number one post defender for the Lakers in terms of frequency last game. And obviously that is probably his biggest weakness as a defender.
Just to quickly add to this, like the two players who have defended the most shots at the rim for the Lakers in this series are Austin Reaves and Luke Kennard. And I think you got to give OKC's scouting, coaching staff a big shout out, because they have been able to, with how much the Lakers switch, they've been able to manipulate the matchups where it often is Austin or Luke as the low man having to protect the rim and or box out an Isaiah Hartenstein or Chet Holmgren, and they're going to lose that matchup 8 or 9 out of 10 times. So I think OKC's done, like, the, you know, they will target those guys in ISOs as well, but they also, it's like, if we can't do that, we will find a way to warp the matchups to have them as the low man, and they've just dominated that.
That's been one of the biggest weaknesses, if not the biggest weakness of Austin's defensive game, is once guys get into the paint against him, unless he can swipe down and get the ball before it's up, if a guy gets the ball above the shoulders, they're scoring almost every single time against him. So OKC's done a great job, right? Picking on the things they can pick on. You've got to see if the Lakers can mitigate those things in this game tonight. We do want to spend a decent chunk of the show on the chat, getting into some of the questions, the comments, and all of that. But we do need to give a shout out to our sponsor real quick, and that is Prize Picks. Prize Picks, guys, you can use them super easy. The link is in the description down below. The code is HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly. We'll make some selections for tonight. Guys, how are we feeling about Rui Hachimura in a game like this? 14 and a half points. He's been a laser so far. Does that continue?
I don't like that one. Cade over 19 and a half feels pretty safe.
Okay. I like that too.
I would agree.
LeBron, 23 points.
I kind of like that one.
You like LeBron, 23 points?
You want 23 and 27 the first two games?
He's also famous for, like, I don't want to get swept, so I'm going to leave it all out on the floor kind of thing.
Yeah.
All right, let's go there. We'll go LeBron. We'll go Cade. Use that code HMA. Link is in the description down below. And again, play $5, get $50 instantly. If you're going to play, please do so responsibly. Big thank you to Prize Picks for sponsoring today's show. All right, guys, let's get into some of our chat questions and comments here. We'll get into some of our things coming in. I guess we'll go here first. And Jovan, I think we've had this conversation a bit before, but is Rob Pelinka on the hot seat? To me, it feels like more we're seeing more additions coming into the Lakers front office rather than subtractions, rather than replacing Rob Pelinka. I think a lot is riding on this summer, but I don't think this summer is the time that we see Rob Pelinka removed from his role.
No. My stance or perspective and understanding of the situation has not changed over the last couple months that we've been having this conversation. I mean, if anything, like with them winning the Rockets series, I feel like Rob has gotten some credit lately for the DA and Marcus signings and the Luke trade. And like, he did make some moves that ended up being pretty pivotal for this group, and each of those guys having, I mean, Marcus was, I thought, I've made the point before, I think he's been their fourth best player on the season. And then DA outplaying Alperen Şengün in multiple games in the first round, Luke having the game one and game two performance, the game winning shot against Orlando. Like, you can make a case you made some real moves this year that led to this group overachieving or at least contributed to actual wins. Now, I have been critical of the front office, and I will continue to beat the drum of, I thought they could have been more aggressive last summer, that they put some constraints on the types of moves that they were willing to make. And like, they did great within those constraints, but I think that there's like a false notion that that was their only pathway to building this roster. And they could have put draft capital on the table. They could have tried to get off of Jared Vanderbilt or Dalton Connect or Maxi Kleba and some, Gabe Vincent, some of these contracts, and they did not. And so I think for the constraints that they put on themselves in terms of, we don't want to trade a first to get off a contract, we don't want to dump anybody, we want to see what we have with Gabe and Maxi and whatever, like, sure, they did really well within those constraints, but I think it's what we're not being honest if we're saying like that was the only way they could have built the roster. I thought the Gabe plus a second for Luke was a great trade. It obviously played out about as well as realistically possible. But there's a lot of pressure on this summer, and just looking at the cap space for a second, if you say 50 to 55, right, there's multiple ways the Lakers offseason could play out in terms of how much cap space they have. But let's even sort of moderately say like 50 to 55 million between LeBron, Marcus, Rui, and Luke, just right there with those four guys, you could easily hit 55 and not even have enough to retain all four of those guys potentially, just with that 55 million in cap space. So the Lakers are in a tough spot here where they have to navigate what's happening with LeBron, what's happening with Austin, what's happening with Marcus, Rui, Luke, Jackson, DA. That there's a lot of moving parts here in terms of who's going to be on the roster, who's not, and at what number, like, I think contract length is like a sneaky thing here of I think it's different with we talked about it with Marcus, like how much you want to offer Marcus on a short-term deal versus a longer-term deal, and how does Marcus feel about that? Does he want more years? Okay, well, then that annual average value has got to come down. So there's so many moving parts with this offseason that it's imperative they nail it. It's imperative they bring in some more people into the front office and really beef it up and bring in people to the scouting department, particularly on the pro side. And if they nail it, then I think they're obviously in a good spot going to next season and moving forward. If they don't, and it's sort of a run it back summer, it's maybe we add one guy, but it's basically the same roster, then I think we could be having a different conversation a year from now. But for now, I mean, he got an extension last year. You could say within the self-imposed constraints, he did as good of a job as possible. But I think the pressure is on this summer. Like, you can't have three straight first-round exits with Luka Doncic on your roster. I don't think that's tenable. So a lot of pressure going into next year.
Yeah, I think it comes down to this. The can has been kicked down the road. We're at the end of the road. Now, this is it. You've got to figure this out this summer. Last summer, the moves they made, Marcus Smart, DeAndre Ayton, Jake LaRavia, those are fine moves, and they've paid off to different, you know, varying degrees and at different stages of the season. But even that last summer, we were saying the same thing. We were saying they didn't, some good moves, but they also kept the powder dry, right? You didn't give up any of your trade assets. You still had your picks that you could move and all of that. And that was going to be to make some other moves to fill the holes at the trade deadline, that you were going to need to find the athleticism, the defense, the switchability, the shooting, all the stuff that they needed. Okay, we're going to wait until the trade deadline. We'll see what's what, see what the team really has and doesn't have, and then we'll make some moves there. But when you didn't add those things to the trade deadline, again, Luke Kennard has worked out well, but that then kicks the can once again down the road to this summer. The problem is you go to the following summer, I'm talking about 2027, suddenly Luka, you start looking at, oh, shit, he's a year from him being able to get to free agency. Are the Lakers then in an uncomfortable spot with him? You got to be really good. Look, Dallas fans are already talking about it. Get a few years from now, come home Luka, right? That's going to be a situation that you don't want to be in, where Luka looks around, not this summer, but the next one. You don't want him looking around going, man, I just wasted a couple of years here, and we never really put together a full team. So I do think there's a lot of flexibility this summer, but a very small margin for error. They've got to get it all right, and this is the culmination of kicking that can. The end of the road is here. You've got to put together a team this summer that you think can really take some steps forward and really vault into. I hesitate to say like OKC, San Antonio status, because it feels like that's such a big leap, but you need significant progress here this summer. I don't think there's any question about that, but I do agree with you over that. I don't think this is the end for Rob Pelinka. I think if this summer goes very poorly, then some conversations probably start to be had.
I would just add that I think for this new kind of phase of the team build, where the reality is they do have to pay Austin, and they're going to have to find some number to get LeBron to agree to. And you're going to certainly need to try to retain Marcus Smart at a minimum. Rui Hachimura in his 3-point shooting has certainly complicated contract negotiations for him. So like, it is going to be more important than ever for the Lakers to find discounted talent. And that's where, like, if Rob is going to stick around, you have to anchor him with scouting talent, a lot of scouting talent, pro level scouting, undrafted scouting, guys that are looking in the weeds. You got, like, let's say, for instance, you don't trade the 2026 first on draft night. That needs to be a rotation player. That needs to be a dude who can come in and play in your top 7 or 8 guys this year. Like, that cannot be a miss. And so there's a certain amount of, more than ever, succeeding on the margins will drive things more than, you know, a small decision here or there with the actual money decisions in this offseason. Like, just take Rui, for example. Like, let's say you let Rui go or you keep Rui. That decision, one way or the other, could matter less than, do you find 2 or 3 rotation players that make a combined $7 million? Between a late first round pick and an undrafted guy, 2-way guy, whatever it might be. That, so like, I think we're entering into a phase where, like, we keep thinking like, well, what if we throw this RFA money at Tari Eason or at Peyton Watson? And it's like, no. The way this is most likely going to work is you're going to retain a lot of guys from this year, and there's maybe one trade to make, and you had better hit on your 2026 first. You had better hit on the vet minimum signings. You had better hit on your 2-way guys. Like, you need to hit on the margins, and that's where Rob needs the most help.
Yeah, that's where they've historically struggle winning in the margins. We did just get a, guys, this is a record, $50 super chat. Appreciate that. The largest we've gotten on this show.
Thank you.
Aziz Kavaz said, gentlemen, good season. Lakers in seven. Wouldn't that be great? That would have to be the greatest comeback that we've ever seen in sports, or at least up there.
No team's ever come back from 3-0.
Yeah. So there you go. I would have liked to have seen DA and Jackson out there with Chet and the German Beast. Been saying it all year. Jax can hit those threes. LOL. I'm delusional. Thanks for every game, guys. Have a good summer. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that. I've gotten this question quite a bit too. Why aren't the Lakers trying, since you've got Chet and Hartenstein out there? Why are the Lakers not throwing out two bigs in Jackson and DeAndre? And Jason, why not throw that strategy out there?
Because they're two of our worst players. I hate to be like super
blunt answer,
crass about it, but like, I mean, how many times have you watched Ayton in the series and been like, man, we need more of that guy on the floor, or like Jackson? Like, I just quite simply, like, you want to know why Chet and Hartenstein works? Because they're both awesome. And if anything, the centers have been kind of the fail point of the series. Like, I would argue between Rui's shooting, you know, Austin's passing over the last couple of games, LeBron's kind of semi-consistent scoring throughout the series, like, the perimeter guys have done a pretty solid job of just competing, you know, and where things, I think the primary fail point, and it's not just these two guys, but the primary fail point of the series is Hartenstein and Chet have whooped Jackson and DeAndre's ass. Like, just mollywopped them. And I think it's been too much to even, like, I think if those two guys hold their own in the matchup better, we have a couple close games in this series, and maybe it's 2-1, maybe the Lakers have a shot, but like, they just got absolutely annihilated. And so I think having both of them on the floor at the same time would have just been more damaging.
Yep.
Like, everyone was like, why is Kleba on the floor? I'm like, why? You know exactly why Kleba's on the floor.
Because JJ saw one quarter and went, nope, I can't count on either one of these guys. Maxi, go get out there and set some hard screens or something. Yeah.
Well, that didn't go well too. Either.
No, it didn't. Yeah,
that might have been the worst. Well, I don't want to say the worst shift anyone had, because Jake had some rough shifts.
Let's go here. Caesar, before the show started, said, can't realistically get anyone better to replace our free agents. Then, so you're stuck on bringing back the majority of the team. Maybe Giannis is the way. As far as bringing back some of the players and not being able to replace them, some of that's going to have to be done on the trade market. I know a lot of people tend to look at RFAs, like Peyton Watson, like Walker Kessler, and can we get those guys? To me, it's a very difficult thing to do, to get restricted free agents away from their incumbent teams. So yeah, the point is that most of the best free agents out there are already Lakers. So it's not like there's this robust free agent market. If there was, more teams would have cap space. There's a reason why there's not many teams with cap space, and that's because there's not many high-level free agents that are out there. That said, that flexibility that you've got can be used in other ways too. It doesn't have to just be used signing free agents. And I'm curious to see how the Lakers are going to be able to take advantage of that. As far as Giannis, guys, I don't know how you felt on this, but in general, I've been pretty out on pursuing Giannis Antetokounmpo. And I think the Thunder series reveals a lot of why, because I think you're going to have a real challenge building out the depth your roster needs if you have both Luka and Giannis together, not to mention the concerns about the fit with those two. I just think we're in an NBA now where it's not 15 years ago, where give me two of the best players in the NBA, the pieces around them, we'll just try to cobble it together and everything's going to be fine because we've got the two best guys. Today's NBA, you have to have not just depth, you need quality depth up and down your roster, as well as guys that fit specific skill sets. And those skill sets are not cheap or easy to find. So having two guys making the kind of money of Luka and Giannis, very, very difficult in today's NBA to find success with that.
Yeah, I mean, it basically would be, you would lose almost all of, like, you lose LeBron, you lose essentially all of the free agents other than Austin. You could probably keep Jackson, and then you could maybe keep one of Marcus, Rui, Luke at most. But you're going into next year with Luka and Giannis, which is a great two-man combination. I mean, it's two top five players, but you know, then Austin as your number three, but then there's like a pretty big drop off to, I mean, again, maybe you could keep a Marcus or a Rui, but then the rest of the roster is, you know, right now they have Vando, Jake, Bronny Adu, and maybe Dalton on the roster. But then the rest of the guys would be, you'd have like the room exception. Well, I don't even know if you have the room exception. I guess it depends how, but if they're operating with the cap space in the Giannis trade, I think they technically would have the room exception. So you have like one $9 million exception, then the rest are minimum contracts and your 2026 first round pick, although that's probably going to Milwaukee in the trade. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. Is that group winning a title against this OKC team? Like, the star power is great, but the rest of the roster is pretty limited.
Francis Laker said, of all the bad teams, which team will be a good trade partner for us to improve our roster, assuming all of our picks and player contracts are on the table? You know, that's one thing that's actually a bit of a challenge, is that most of the, you know, the bad teams are not going to look to be so bad coming this season. There's a lot of teams that are, and part of that is the 2027 draft is not expected to be very good, but there's not a lot of teams going into the season looking like they're rebuilding. There are still a few, but in terms of trade partners for the Lakers, there's not a bunch of teams that are saying, hey, we're ready to sell off assets, to sell off quality players, because we really want to tank ahead of this 2027 draft class. So that can be a little bit of a challenge in and of itself. I mean, for like the Utah Jazz, or perhaps the best example, like they were tanking like crazy, that they even got fined for it this season, and they're going to be expecting to win games starting next year. They'll have the number two pick. They'll have Jaren Jackson Jr. They'll probably keep Walker Kessler. They've got Lauri Markkanen, and they've got pieces. They're going to be looking to win. So finding sellers on the market may be a little bit of a challenge for the Lakers and everybody else looking to buy this summer. But guys, you know, one of the things that I tend to look for when we talk about, you know, who is a ideal trade partner for the Lakers, I tend to say, well, who have they traded with before? Because a lot of times teams do wind up going back to the same trade part. I'm sure if Atlanta can work out another trade with the Pelicans, they would love to do that, right? But there are certain teams that you tend to go back to. Where are their pressure points around the NBA? Any team that got eliminated earlier than expected? The Orlando Magic might be one. Who exactly the Lakers could go after from those types of teams? We'll see ultimately where they go with this, but it's hard to identify. Clearly, this team is trading away player X, and the Lakers can easily go get this guy. That's where a lot of the grind is going to have to come in this summer for Rob Pelinka to figure things out. Jason, what should they be looking for? Can you think of any players or teams specifically that the Lakers should be targeting, and types of guys that they should be after?
So I think that this series in particular has shined a light on the center position again, in a way where, like, if you're looking for one sort of big positive, you know, silver lining, whatever you want to take from getting swept in a series that you kind of expect to get swept, it's that, you know, I think LeBron and Austin have flashed that they can play in this matchup to a certain extent. They've got to find a way to be more consistent, specifically Austin. But the big one is the center rotation got their butt kicked. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, you know, can Luka maybe have set DeAndre up with a few more lobs, but it's not like Luka made a big difference for DeAndre in their regular season matchups. And so,
well, he'd have to catch them.
Yeah, exactly. I think like looking at that as kind of like the bigger move of the offseason, I think the bigger move of the offseason is them targeting a center. And whether that ends up being in free agency with a guy like Mitch, or if it ends up being Isaiah Hartenstein getting his team option rejected by OKC because they think Tomas Sorber is going to play or something, or whether that ends up being a trade for a, you know, someone like a Nick Claxton, whoever it might be. My guess is that the big move of the offseason targets the center position, because I think if Rob ran it back with DeAndre, that would be borderline malpractice after how bad he looked in this series and basically in every single game against OKC. Or that needs to be who they target with that first round pick. They need to find somebody with that first round pick this year in the draft that's like, we think this guy can be either like a good bench backup for Ayton that plays over him in a playoff series, or could essentially become the starter. So I think that's the primary goal from there, because it, in a weird way, I used to think after the Houston series, I'm like, oh, maybe Ayton can be the placeholder until they find the center of the future. And it's like, nah, I just think they're going to lose next year if he's our best center. So like at that point, I actually think Marcus could be a better placeholder at the small forward position than Ayton could be at the center position. And maybe that ends up being the position where you take more of a young player or a look at it as a solution in a different cycle. But I think the number one priority of the center, the offseason has to be who's our starting center? Who's the guy that's going to be the guy that we go down with in this type of matchup?
Jovan, how likely do you think it is that DA is picking up that player option for, I believe it's $8.3 million for next season?
I would say right now more likely than not, just because I've done this exercise on my show where I've gone through, if you just look at the cap sheet of every team across the league, and I think DA still fancies himself as a starting center. I think the goal, this was supposed to be a rehabilitation year for him in terms of his reputation around the league. And it was, let's go take a flyer with the Lakers and let's get back to being, I think that the goal was supposed to be coming out of this year, be signing a multi-year deal, making double digit millions as a starting center moving forward. And I just don't think that's going to be the case. I think there are a few teams across the league. You can maybe make the case that he can make some sense as a play. Like I look at Chicago.
Sure.
There's maybe Chicago, look at him as like he could be here for a year or two. They have an opening there at the five spot. And unless they're drafting someone there, which based on that they're getting the number four pick, doesn't seem like they're going to be taking a center. Maybe he is a guy that they look at, although they could also look at a Mitchell Robinson, et cetera. But I think there's a few teams where he could make some sense as a starter or as a backup. But I think those teams are few and far between. And even some of the teams that have some openings, I'm like, from a cultural fit or just like how he sort of is with his temperament and whatnot, like I just don't think he makes sense in those. Like Golden State's another one where on paper, Golden State, depending on what happens with Porzingis, like they could use an Ayton type. But does Ayton fit with a Curry and a Kerr and a Draymond? And like I don't think so. So I think it's now coming off the Houston series, I think there was some optimism potentially of could he be, to Jason's point, the placeholder, or like did he earn himself some more money here? I think you could make the case that he should still be paid like a little bit more based on at least like his overall regular season production. But I think for the Lakers, like you cannot look at him as more than a backup. And if he does opt in and you can't trade him, you cannot go back into next season with him as a starter. It has to be okay. Like I wouldn't mind something like you find a new center and then it's like DA and Jackson are your two backups and you play them based on the matchup, based on how they're performing. And you have $11 million combined in backup fives. Like that's okay. But if you're running it back with like the Lakers have not invested in the center position in a while. They obviously had AD who fancied himself more of a four than a five, but like this should be the summer, to Jason's point, that they finally invest in this position.
So I've landed essentially with DA as he's like Dennis Schroeder in that he is, if he is your backup, you feel pretty good about that. If he's your starter, you don't feel so good. You don't feel so good about him as your starting five. As far as investing in the center position, let's say the Lakers say, you know what? Screw it. We're going to go after an RFA and we're going to throw whatever it's going to take at either Peyton Watson or Walker Kessler. And the Lakers come to you and say, which one do we go for? Who are you picking?
That's a really good question. The one thing with Walker is I there's a lot of things I like in terms of the drop coverage and the little bit of shooting ability. He's polished. I think he's a good screener. The one thing with him is like, I wonder if he's fast enough for the modern NBA and like versatile enough in the different kinds of coverages that he can exist in. It's just tough with the lack of like recent, film of him with the him missing this entire season. But that's a really interesting question. Jovan, what do you think? Also, I just think I just like Peyton. I think Peyton is a really good player. So I'm curious. Do you guys think Peyton's a better player?
Yeah. It's hard because Kessler's been out of sight so long.
That's what I mean. It's like, it's like, let's just put it this way. Pacers fans are all pissed off they got Zubats in lieu of a better pick.
Sure.
Is Zubats better than Kessler?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And they're like bummed. You know what I mean? Now, obviously, it's because they could have had the number five overall pick. But the point is like Walker isn't exactly a huge needle mover. He's just like a guy who could start, you know what I mean, and be like serviceable. Whereas like Peyton is a guy that I think could come in and legitimately be a 20 point per game scorer post LeBron.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that there's an element here of two-way wings come at a higher premium than, like, I think it's easier to go bargain bin hunting for a center and find a center. Like, even with DA, right? The Lakers, I think, got at least $8 million of value out of him, if not more. Now, I think it's not at like a championship level, and that is where you do probably have to spend to a certain degree, unless you just draft someone or, like Isaiah Hartenstein was originally like a minimum player, right? He was a backup, a seldom used backup, and then he played his way into being a much better player and, finally popped and has, been paid accordingly. But I think it's easier to find some talent. Like, you could even get like a Robert Williams potentially for a minimum contract because of his health, or maybe a little bit more than that, who can outkick that by a decent amount. I think we've seen with the two-way wing market, unless you're drafting those guys, and even then, sometimes it takes like a year or two for them to really develop. The two-way wings are making a lot more money, I think, on average, like the true two-way wings that you would want starting on. Like, just think about like a Jaden McDaniels type. You're not finding that on, in free agency for single digit millions. Like that's just not happening. Whereas you can find it, I think, centers who can give you, like, especially in this context of putting that player next to Luka, putting that player next to Austin and LeBron, and like just the looks that you're going to get, as long as you can rim run and catch and dunk and rebound and protect the rim, like at a reasonable level, I think that's a little bit easier to find than a two-way wing who can be like an all-defense guy and give you 15-plus points a game offensively and shoot at a certain level, right? So I do think from an archetype perspective, the Peyton Watson archetype is probably a little bit rarer than the Walker Kessler archetype. I would say I am a little bit higher on Kessler than Jason is, where I think his upside to me is like top five rim protector and top five rebounder in the league. Now, offensively, of course, like there are some limitations there, though I think he's still kind of around like a 70% shooter in the paint. But I think there is some like Gobert light. I'm not going to go as far as to say Gobert, but like I think he can be a guy who gets you 12 to 14 points, 10, 11 rebounds, and like two blocks and like really high efficiency. So I would be on board with either of them. I would take either of them easily on the Lakers, and I think they are worth the contracts they're going to get. But I do think there's something to, like, LA's really needed a two-way wing for a long time, and clearly that's not something that you just easily acquire on the trade market or in free agency. Otherwise, I think they would have done it. They just haven't been able to do it.
One thing with Walker that I think is worth mentioning, guys, and this is more why I was mentioning the versatility piece, because I should have clarified this. I believe in Walker as a prospect. I think his lack of foot speed is a problem in the context of a Luka Austin team. I don't know that the Lakers can afford to also be slow at center. Walker's a very talented basketball player, and in certain looks, I think he makes a ton of sense. But alongside Luka and Austin, I just think that lineup is too slow. And like, that's kind of the thing where, let's just take Claxton as a counter example. Claxton comes with all of these other downsides in terms of his lack of size, strength wise, and how he can get pushed around and things along those lines. But he gives you a better chance in context with, a faster wing and a faster four. Let's just say it's LeBron, but LeBron's playing really hard. That lineup, I think, has a better chance to keep up with their foot speed. And so in other words, I would say the same thing about Zubats, for the record. Like, Zubats is a really good center, but he's going to go play for a Pacers team where he's surrounded with a ton of speed. So his lack of foot speed won't be as like problematic, I think, in that build as it would be alongside Luka and Austin.
That's a good thought. The foot speed concern with Walker Kessler. What I love about his game is that he can be one of the top shot blockers in the NBA while also being a pretty low foul center. Some of the centers that you see that have a really high shot block rate, They also have a really high foul rate because they're chasing blocks. They're going, they're getting off their feet a lot, and they're committing a lot of fouls in that way. Walker Kessler can block a lot of shots without fouling. I think that's an important skill set, but I think the foot speed concern is a real one. The other thing that is an unknown and no one will know is the three ball actually a real thing. We saw it for five games. He took eight threes. He made six of them. Like, that's, it's not a big enough sample size. I would not expect him to suddenly turn into Brook Lopez and he's suddenly a stretch five or anything. But if that is a weapon for him, I don't expect him obviously to shoot 75% from three, but if that's a weapon for him, it makes him a little bit more useful on the offensive end of the floor. If he's at least a threat out there on the occasion when you do have him step behind the arc. And that's an unknown. Again, we only saw five games of him, but he did look like he had added that to his game. So I'm curious about how he develops there moving forward. But ultimately, I agree with you guys. I would lean more towards the wing. I think the wing is harder to find in today's NBA. So I would lean towards Peyton Watson. All right, we do need to get into a couple more questions. I do want to give a shout out here to our sponsor. So let's go there. SeatGeek, we appreciate them for sponsoring today's show.
So the NBA playoffs are obviously a grind, but I can see the light at the end of the tunnel finally. Now that my wife and I live in Colorado, we're by Red Rocks, and so I'm excited to go see some concerts this year. I'm actually very excited to go see the Tedeschi Trucks Band. They're coming to play a two-night set at the end of July, July 31st. I think Derek Trucks is one of the best guitarists in the history of the world. So very, very excited to get out, which is why I want to give the sponsor of today's video, SeatGeek, a huge shout out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. And it's really just about how simple the process is. It's so easy to open up the app, look at your map of all the seats, but you can sort by deal, which is my favorite feature. And they rate every single ticket on a scale of 1 to 10 by how good the deal is. So I know if I'm picking from these ones at the top, I'm getting an amazing deal. And as I work further down the list, obviously, it might not be as good of a deal, which kind of just simplifies the process for me and helps me know that I'm getting the right ticket for the right price. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. And you can now get World Cup tickets on SeatGeek. And by the way, every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use code COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code COLLECTIVE10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek.
All right. And again, big thank you to SeatGeek for sponsoring today's show. Julian said, all I want to see tonight is high effort, basically auditioning for a spot back. Need to see an increase in a Do Theroux's minutes, please. And please, JJ, no Jake Laravia. Well, that's the change that JJ made for game three, and we'll see if he sticks with that here for game four. But that pretty much echoes what we've already said on the show, guys, about the effort level, and we want to see the Lakers really kind of empty the tank. But we appreciate the super chat there. Julian,
I do think that was Adu's best minutes of the season.
I think so. He did have, you know, missed a couple little bunnies at the rim, but he was able to get his offensive rebounds there. You know what?
Like, played super hard and looked like an athlete.
Who do you think has the most to gain from tonight's game that's a Laker?
Austin.
Yeah. I agree. I think Austin getting another good game against OKC under his belt would be massive for his contract negotiations and for his confidence.
I would say Adu's maybe second.
Yeah.
On that, right? I'm trying to think because I think with the rest of the supporting cast, you're not like if DA has a monster game tonight, I would say like, okay, like that's nice to see that he could do that against OKC when he's really struggled against them all season, but like a little too late from him. Rui, we've already like I think he's had a solid series. Luke, we've seen like the ups and downs with him through the playoffs and just him probably being in a little bit too big of a role. Marcus, I thought he was better in game three in terms of at least like not being as involved offensively and deferring a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, I just looking at the supporting cast, maybe Jackson has not really played that well, so he could have something to gain. But I would say it's probably Austin first and Adu second.
Let's go here. Tyler
Austin
said
millions tonight.
Luca, Austin Reeves, Herb, Braun, Robinson, Bench, Grimes, Smart, Oubre, Lakers, 26 rookie, Ayton, Hayes, That's a lot that you're adding to this team.
Can we have AJ DeBonsa too?
Right? Can we just throw him on top? Top 10 defense, top 10 offense. So you're talking about adding Herb Jones, but then somehow you still have the 2026 pick. I'd imagine that would probably have to be involved in any kind of a Herb Jones trade. Signing Mitch Robinson. I noticed Rui's not here, so I guess he'd be on his way out. It's fitting the puzzle pieces together. What do you have to pay to get Grimes? Some question marks there. I mean, I don't hate some of these targets or anything like that, but making all these guys fit is going to be tough. I know, guys, right now I see a lot of, just from Lakers fans in general, they want names. They want to know who. Who is it that's being added to this team? And unfortunately, this time of year, there's an infinite, and I love it. I love having different routes to go down, but there's an infinite number of ways that this roster can be put together this summer. And we just have to remember the confines that they're going to be playing this game within, the amount of flexibility that they're going to have to work with, and understand that as much as we want to see a great roster brought together, and hopefully it will happen, there's a lot of things that they're going to have to get through and fit everything together just right to make it work, because they are operating under, despite having almost $50 million in cap space, some severe limitations here when they're trying to put puzzle pieces together. So we'll do some like ideal offseason roster builds and things of that nature, but it's not easy coming up with a clear and obvious path forward. And that's not trying to be pessimistic or trying to be negative. That's just recognizing the obstacles that are in front of them, which to me just makes it all the more satisfying if and when they are able to overcome them. So not trying to present some doom scenario here for the Lakers that, oh, they can never get better. But I think it's just important to remember that there's a lot they've got to get right, and a lot of things are going to have to fall the Lakers' way this summer, and we'll see if they're up to the task. Let's go here. Strategy for the 25th pick, trade, draft a center, draft a wing. I'll tell you this, Jason, you said earlier, if they use the pick this year, it's got to be a rotation player. They've had two shots at rotation players with first-round picks in the last couple of years. Neither one of them became a rotation player. If you keep this pick, it has to work out. It has to become a rotation-level player.
Yeah, I would argue that a miss there, in the context of all the recent misses, would be devastating.
And last one we'll go to here.
It has to be over 6'7", too. Which is why, like, it has to be one of those two player archetypes. It has to be like a wing or a big forward or a center. I don't
Kingston
think
Fleming.
You cannot go with another 6'3" guard.
Can we get a small guard who doesn't defend well? Let's do that. What is AR's ideal scoring role on a team that can beat OKC and win it all? Is AR's ceiling high enough to play a Kyrie type role alongside Luka? What do you guys think on that? Because I do think his ideal role is not what we're seeing right now, where he is the primary on ball, bring the ball up against OKC's defense and be the initiator. That this is probably not the ideal role that we're seeing Austin Reeves in right now.
Yeah, I think it's really just I would even argue over the course of this series, a lot of his mistakes have come from fatigue, like in-game fatigue, where like he has to do something 2, 3, 4 possessions in a row and he just gets a little rushed, a little sloppy. Like I think he clearly needs to put on some muscle so that he can handle the contact a little bit more. And he did put on some muscle from last year, but there's another level there. And then I think by shrinking his usage, it can allow him to be more focused on a possession-to-possession basis. Because I'd argue like, it was more the passing in game 3. It was more the scoring in game 2. But it's been the turnovers really that have undone his success in each game. And I think those come from high usage and just him not really having the opportunity to kind of have a simplified role in offense within games to, you know, kind of lighten his load from possession to possession.
So I would say for sure one of my takeaways is like he should not be the primary ball handler against OKC, and that's a situation that, like, I think LeBron has been the number one guy in terms of usage and shot volume overall, but Austin is the guy initiating the offense, leading LA into the offense. And I think with Luka back, Luka would be the high usage monster from a ball handling and playmaking perspective, and Austin would be more playing off of him. So I think the ideal role for him against OKC would be as a secondary ball handler and playmaker. There might be some bench shifts where he's the primary guy, but I think more so in that secondary role. And then I think ideally he's the third option offensively. I think that's where I've settled. I think can be at a high level as a third option offensively. And I think even when we talk about his contract, that's more third option money than second option money. I think, if he gets the full 5-year 240, okay, that's more second option money. But if he's making 30 million, 35, even like 38, that's more in line with more number threes. If you look at most of the guys in that range, those are the Aaron Gordon, Derek White's on some of these teams that, or if it is a number two, it's like a number two on a team that's just not good enough because they have a misallocation of money or assets or whatever. So I think if he's like your number three somewhere in the 30s and he's more the number two ball handler playmaker against OKC, but overall probably number three in the offensive hierarchy, I think that's the best way to deploy him against them.
Yep. Agreed. Agreed. All right. We do have a few chat questions that I'm going to save. We'll get to on the next show. If the Lakers do see their season come to an end tonight, then our next show, it's going to be Jovan and I, it's going to be coming up on Thursday. And should the Lakers win and we go to another game coming up on Wednesday, then our next show will be on Friday. So just kind of giving you guys a heads up, either Thursday or Friday, depending on what the results of tonight's game. That's when you can catch the next episode of the Lakers Collective. We appreciate all of you as always. If you haven't done so yet, make sure you hit the subscribe button. I have saved any of the chat questions that we didn't get to. We'll either add them onto the next show or we'll do a bonus show to get to those. Guys, great getting on here and talking with you. And hopefully this is not the last Lakers game that we get to cover here for the season tonight.
Yeah, let's hope for a win. I appreciate you guys being flexible today. It was good to see you both. And I'm sorry that I'm going to miss the eulogy later this week, but I look forward to digging back into everything with you guys next week.
Yes, sir. I'm going to go drink some tea and get ready for tonight.
Yeah, feel better. Feel better. All right, everybody. Thank you again. Till next time. See ya and stay safe.